So how did Israel get into this situation with a large proportion of its population exempt from military service on the basis of religion? Dr. Ari Karman is president of the Israel Democracy Institute.
This has been a very complex and complicated issue since the inception of the state. Since 1949, after the founding of the state, through 1977, the ultra-Orthodox at that time comprises about between 3 and 5% of the population, did serve in the army, except several hundred students in yeshivot that were exempted from it. The real change occurred in 1977 during the government of Menachem Begin, who decided to exempt all the students in those yeshivot from armed service and linked it to their participation in the labor force, namely that they should not take part in the labor force. A number of pressures and changes and processes have occurred. First and foremost, demographically, the size of the ultra-Orthodox community within Israel has grown.
Yes, Doctor, I believe that we're talking about a growth from somewhere from about 400 people in David Ben-Gurion's time to 60,000 today.
And there have been pressures to change it. Now, one thing that I must add, the community of the ultra-Orthodox is not homogeneous. It is comprised of different streams and different waves. And in fact, about 58% of the ultra-Orthodox live under the poverty line. And there have been growing sounds from within to change their status. I have to say that all this thing was pressured by a decision of the Supreme Court that called upon the parliament, the Israeli parliament, to legislate here in this direction.
Dr. Karman, what do the Haredi cost the state? I mean, what is the estimated financial burden of these exemptions?
The rate of male participation in the Israeli labor force is the lowest among OECD countries. This is mainly due to the lack of participation by the Haredi communities.
I believe the IMF has warned that even economic growth in Israel, which has been experiencing an economic boom for several years, could be at risk in the long term if this financial burden continues.
Yes, we are all very much aware of it. And I think that a major strategic goal has been to find ways to engage the Haredi community in the labor force. And as I said, there are some indications that very slow processes have occurred, but at this time, the sense is that they need some stimuli to enhance it.
What was the basis of Prime Minister Ben-Gurion's decision to exempt a very small group of Haredi back around the founding of Israel in the late 1940s?
At that time, a dialogue between Ben-Gurion and the leader of the then Haredi community, this was an agreement in which Ben-Gurion adhered to the request that geniuses and those who were born to be students of the halachic scripts will be exempted, and hence they talked about just a few hundreds. You have to understand ideologically, during the historical times of the pre-state era, for the Haredi community since then and to date, the state is a shell. It does not have any specific value. They became part and parcel in the fringes of what we call the state. They traditionally opposed any kind of nationalistic or expansionistic trends of the Israeli government.
The president of the Israel Democracy Institute, Dr. Ari Karman, speaking from Jerusalem. This is the Religion and Ethics Report with me, Andrew West.